The recordings are started.
Thank you. Everyone, this is the 81st meeting of the CWG. It's 1507 UTC. We're starting a bit late. We had some audio issues. Chuck Gomes is on audio only. Jonathan just joined, but Lise will be kicking off the call until his audio is set up. Oh, he may be ready to go.
Yeah, hi, Grace. Can you confirm you can hear me? I think it's all okay now.
Yes, crystal clear.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. So, welcome, everyone. Lisa and I have both been through the agenda previously, and we posted that to you. Lisa will be on with us for the first hour, and we'll pick up on one or two items as we go through. But for the most part, I'll lead the primary purpose today is to just go through some of the key points we've been working on lately via Implementation Oversight Task Force. So what we have been doing there, as you know, is we took the former design team heads or leads us and worked closely with staff and are continuing to do so. And many of you, in fact, who have been on the IOTF are here now. And the purpose of that was to have rapid iterative communication with the ICANN staff, bearing in mind that ICANN staff are leading the implementation. I've got an open mic somewhere, so if whoever's got an open mic, if you could just make sure your mics are muted. And so our primary job as both WG and the IOTF representing the CWG in the short term, but bringing things back to the CWG, is to ensure the implementation is done consistent with our proposal. And really that means probably to the letter and spirit of the proposal. We still have some background noise from an open mic. So just for that. Okay. So the purpose of today's meeting is to run through some of the key points that we've been working on. We'll try to make it interactive, but by definition of the fact that the IOTF has done some work with the implementation team, we have essentially done the preliminary work, so it will be a little bit more report-oriented, but please do interact with us on any key points, and we'll try and flag some of those as well where we think there's useful discussion to be had. So the first item under, first sub-bullet under item two is to look at the PTI bias, and there's a point from the Articles of Incorporation in there, which is what AOI stands for. And there what we did was, you'll remember that the staff helped us, Grace in fact helped us by pulling all of, Sidley did the review of the bylaws, and we took Sidley's comments or questions and incorporated that into a table, drafted some answers. And the way we did that was Lisa and I went off and first of all drafted our initial answer based on our understanding of what the CWG had intended or what was in our view best practice. We've run that past the IOTF and had some pretty thorough discussion on that in two separate IOTF meetings, and we now bring these to the CWG. So they should be pretty well formed, and so I will want to talk through them reasonably fast, but by the same token, if anyone has a concern about the way they have settled, or if you simply want to clarify why or how they've been set up as they are, please do go ahead and ask. So the first one deals with the first point on the table you see in front of you, section 5.2.3. The question here related to the qualifications of the directors of the PTI board. And just as a helpful point, it may help you to have the CWG. And I'm just pulling it up myself. In fact, the red line comments on the CWG, because that's where these comments all derive from, that are essentially summarized in the table. But in this section, which is 5.2.3, is essentially the qualifications of the directors. So there's a bunch of qualifications laid out, and Sidley's point was not all of these qualifications come out of the bill. Are you happy with these qualifications, And in general, we were, and found that there were no additional qualifications required. However, we did suggest additional language needs to be inserted to include appropriate diversity considerations. And moreover, that these are probably or possibly applied separately to the ICANN and NOMCOM appointees. What we mean by that is what we didn't want, because if you just to remind you, the way the board is constituted is ICANN will appoint all five ETI board members. And in fact, they can appoint up to five board members. We anticipate they will appoint five board members. Those board members are nominated to ICANN by ICANN itself, in the case of three, and in the case of the community nominated members, they will come through the nominating committee, and in the first instance will be the co-chairs, Lisa and myself, coming from our community. So ICANN then goes and appoints these to the board, and the risk was that ICANN appoints, for example, that if we have a uniform diversity criteria, ICANN appoints three North Americans, three women, three men, or whatever the case is, and that limits the community's ability to make our nominations and appointees. So we suggested that the diversity criteria be applied separately to appointees from nominated by ICANN and nominated by the NOMCOM. And that's what that third point is there. So I guess it's a little bit soft in the sense that it says possibly applied separately to ICANN and NOMCOM appointees. I think my view is that it should be applied separately. Diversity criteria should be applied separately to ICANN and NOMCOM appointees. Please give feedback if you think otherwise. So we've said we want diversity, but and I'm actually suggesting we're firmer with the language that it is applied separately. We could say preferably if we didn't want to be absolutely firm. Maybe that's the right way to do it, but preferably applied separately to the ICANN and NOMCOM appointees. And just to note that Sharon Flanagan from Sidley is joining, so if you have sort of legally related questions as to why these points were in there, or and Sharon did go through these with us originally, she'll be available to answer those. Right, so I'm going to propose that's preferably applied separately to ICANN and NOMCOM appointees. Please do come back if you raise your hand if you want things to be applied if there's something different. Then the next section of the document, section 5.33, goes into further qualifications, and we deemed that those were acceptable and that no additional qualifications were required. And moreover, from our review, they didn't seem to preclude the proposed interim directors, because one of the concerns would be is you've set all these criteria out and we've said we're going to have these interim directors, and then suddenly we've disqualified them. It appears that they do not disqualify the interim directors, and providing they do not, we don't need an exception or a carve-out for the interim directors. They appear to qualify in any event, both based on the qualifications and additional qualifications on page 4 and 5 of the document. Next section, I'll need to go through a little more carefully, because this is 5.4, the election of a chairperson, and it actually deals in more detail with the board and how the board, these are sort of corporate governance issues for the PTI board. Here we put these set of bullet points down. We said that a chairperson is required. We would like to have a chair of the board. We would like that chair to be elected by the board, and we would like to ensure that chair of the board is not the PTI manager. In other words, that there is a separation between the chair and what in normal terms might be the chief executive or the operational manager of the entity. We didn't go so far as to say that the chairperson must be a NOMCOM appointed director. We were concerned that if we did that, we perhaps precluded a good chair that existed amongst the executive. So we said there is a preference that the chairperson be a NOMCOM appointed director, if possible. We then went on to say that the president may be the PTI manager. We didn't link that firmly and say that the president must be the PTI manager, because Sidley told us the corporation should have a president, a treasurer, and a secretary. It seems logical that the president would be the PTI manager, but if for any reason there's a reason not to, we haven't said that the president must be the PTI manager. And here I suppose I would have a point for Sharon, if you think we should be in any way cautious about this position, because our original draft said that the president must be the PTI manager, and we softened that in discussion in the IOTF. But if your counsel is that may cause us problems or is in some way problematic, please do let us know, and that would be the case in general, I think, Sharon. Over to you, Sharon. Come in on this point, please.
It would be helpful just to understand when we say PTI manager, what that means. If that is, the top-level person, the president, the CEO, the chief, however you want to describe it, we think that the intention is that that person be the president. So is the PTI manager, in effect, the most senior member of the team, the management team?
The answer is yes.
Okay. Then in that case, I would recommend that we be clear that the PTI manager is the president. I don't think you want another person to be named who doesn't maybe even have a managerial role taking a spot that actually has quite a bit of authority.
Okay, so personally, I don't disagree with you, and so I would encourage anyone who does have a concern with that to let it be known. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I was going to say exactly what Sharon said. I took those two terms as synonymous. PTI manager is the most senior person. That's normally called the president. So I presume that they were the same, and I think we should remove any ambiguity. In terms of the preference that the chairperson be a NOMCOM appointee, at any given time, the board will elect the chair. They're going to use whatever their best judgment is at the time. So I see no merit in putting a preference into any formal document such as the bylaws. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the first point. Let me give you a bit of help on the rationale. I mean, for the other one. In my view, and in fact, it came up in the discussion within the IOTF that a separation between the chair and the staff to create a degree of independence is best practice from a corporate governance point of view. So it's a desirable point. And in fact, the original draft said the chairperson must be a NOMCOM. It's not technically correct. So if whoever's taking the notes, it's not technically correct to say a NOMCOM appointed director. A NOMCOM nominated director is the correct terminology, I think, because ICANN will appoint. So the NOMCOM doesn't appoint. So that's the origin of that, Alan and others, if you want to understand where that came from. Caboose? Caboose, coming on audio, we don't hear you yet.
Widely used, and a better case than manager in the definitions. With respect to the whether it should be ICANN election or NOMCOM appointment, I first seek a little bit of clarification if you can give appointed and election. Election, I think the ICANN also appoint someone, but not elect. Do they elect someone or they appoint someone? The election would be among the board members how to nominate someone, but the end result would be a nomination or appointed. So, first of all, could you clarify whether this we have a talk in the same term? If ICANN has no difficulty, my preference also would be that this would be nominated by the NOMCOM committee rather than by ICANN. Thank you.
Okay. Just to clarify the three different terms. I don't think we are. Well, the only place in which we are using election is in the selection of the chair by the board. That's the only place where there's an election, when the board selects. And maybe we should say selected rather than elected, but I don't mind. Either way, the board selects their chair. Now, separate to that, by the matter of as a technical point, this is PTI is an ICANN affiliate. ICANN appoints the directors of its affiliate. However, we have agreed as part of this process that two of those directors will be derived from within the community via the NOMCOM. So the NOMCOM puts forward those two directors, which technically ICANN could choose, I guess, not to appoint to the board, but that would cause all sorts of other issues. So we would expect that as a matter of general course, ICANN would simply appoint those directors unless there was a serious concern. And then the other three are the so-called ICANN directors, or those derived from within ICANN, and ICANN appoints those three. So I hope that helps clarify, Caboose. Lisa, go ahead.
Thank you, Jonathan. Actually, in the proposal, we suggested that ICANN would, in order to keep this board small and and lean in a way, we suggested that it would be the PTI manager and maybe two other senior staff from ICANN that would sit on the board. And for that reason, I think it's important that we have a preference for a NOMCOM appointed director as chairperson instead of ICANN staff. And I think that makes a difference because this is a very small board of five members, so we can express a preference, and if it's not followed, but that is a strong signal. Thank you.
So doing, we provide guidance, but we don't make it mandatory. I notice for the person, and Caboose is supportive of that, I notice for the person taking notes that there's Paul Kane, Cheryl, and Olivier are suggesting we use the term selected by the board, rather elected by the board with respect to the chair, and I don't have a problem with that. And here's an interesting one, actually, because really we then get to the point. So the group said that the preference is that the chairperson is a NOMCOM appointed director. However, if the president is a director, which in fact we've said the president, based on the advice we took earlier, we said the president must be the PTI manager. So there's another change there. The president must be the PTI manager. And then we go on to say, if the president is a director, then the chairperson should be the NOMCOM appointed director. And we even reiterate that by saying that the president could not hold both positions, president and chairperson. So in effect, what is likely to happen here is that I would expect that ICANN is very likely to put the president on the board as one of the five board seats, and therefore that the chair is almost certainly likely to be an independent director, a director derived from the NOMCOM process. So Sharon confirms that actually the president will be the director. So in effect, then, what's happened here, if we stick with the current draft, the president will be the director, and therefore that the chair will be one of the NOMCOM appointed directors, which I don't have a concern with, because I think it's a good separation to have a distance between a staff member. Exactly. And then Matthew says, well, they should simply make it explicit. Well, we do. We do it clumsily, Matthew Shears, in that you say we should make it explicit that the chair is NOMCOM appointed. Well, in effect, we do. Grace, go ahead.
So, Jonathan, if that's the case, then if the sentence then becomes president is the PTI manager, then the next sentence that we added yesterday in the IOTF call about the president being, if the president is a director, da-da-da, and then the avoidance of doubt sentence, those two sentences would be deleted. Is that correct? Since they would be repeating the prior sentence about the chairperson being a NOMCOM nominated director?
Defer to Sharon. I guess they do become redundant, but I'll defer to Sharon because I think we could probably almost revert to the original language of this. Go ahead, Sharon.
Yeah, I think the language comes out, but then the preference stated above, I think, is now not just a preference, it's a should, right? Because the preference was only in the event that the president was not a director. But we said if the president is a director, the chair should be a NOMCOM nominated director, right?
Correct. So, and in fact, that, as it turns out, was how we had drafted things originally. So a chairperson is required. The chairperson must be elected by the board. The chairperson must not be the PTI manager. The chairperson must or should be a NOMCOM appointed director. The president is the PTI manager. And then the last two sentences fall away. Is that clear enough for you, Sharon? Good. Okay. Please do come back, anyone, if you've got concerns about that, but it seems like it sort of falls out rather naturally, and for what it's worth, in my opinion, is good corporate governance, even though this is a relatively small entity and seems to represent a reasonable balance. Right. We then go on to section 5.5, and here we talk about terms. And I guess it's useful to know that we did talk about 1, 2, or 3-year terms, and we talked about the number of repeat terms. Having discussed all of these various possibilities, we settled on the fact that 1 year was too short, 3 years was too long, and therefore a 2-year term made sense. We wanted to ensure that the NOMCOM appointed directors were elected on alternating years so that they didn't change at the same time each time, and therefore just to note that what that means is that one of the interim directors may need to serve for more than 1 year in order to accommodate this. Having said that, we realized, well, there's no reason why if they fit the bill, if they meet the criterion and they are and the mechanisms are fulfilled, which is the NOMCOM, I guess, supporting that, there is no reason why both interim directors couldn't serve for more than an initial period, providing the appropriate processes were followed. So there's first point is elected for 2 years. Secondly, elected on alternate years. Third, that means that one or both may need to serve for more than 1 year in order to accommodate this. And finally, that the NOMCOM appointed director should not serve for more than 2 consecutive terms or 4 years in total. Sharon.
Thanks, Jonathan. I wanted to come back to something you must have covered before I was able to join. So I can wait if there are other people with comments on the issue you teed up. Mine was about the qualifications for the interim directors.
Okay. Well, look, in the absence of any other hands, why don't we go back to that? Let's just pause for one moment and see if anyone's got any comments on those terms of election of successors. Does not look like it, so let's go back to that point on qualifications, Sharon.
Okay. So on the topic of the interim directors, so the language of the bylaw says that no person who serves in any capacity, including as a liaison, on any supporting organization's council or advisory committee can serve as a director of PTI, and no person who serves on the nominating committee can serve as a director of PTI. We have thought that the two proposed interim directors would fall within that category and therefore technically not be permitted. Is that not the case, Jonathan?
Sharon, does it say that they must never have served or must not currently be serving?
It speaks as of a current date, so no person who serves in the current, present tense.
to the best of my knowledge, Lisa and I are not in contravention of that. Neither of us sits on a council currently, and neither of us has recently, if ever, served on the NOM.
Okay, good. We just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And Lisa confirms that point in the chat. So then we go on to the 553, which is independent for the purpose of the nominating committee appointments. And here we have the provision that the NOMCOM appointed director should not have been an ICANN employee for 3 years, and we accepted that suggestion. And in addition, we widened it to say that this should include someone who has acted in a professional capacity, that is to say they've provided paid for services or as a consultant to ICANN, because as many of you will be aware, ICANN staff in quotes are sometimes consultants to ICANN, so that they are not necessarily employees. So it's really just widening that definition to cover consultant employees or consultants in that case. Next one, 552, deals with removal and the opportunity for the board to remove directors for missing a required number of meetings. We felt that was reasonable, that a board, if it was not satisfied that the member was, but we did soften it to say may remove and not must remove. The circumstances there are thinking, you know, there may be a reasonable basis. You might have a very well-qualified director who has, for example, a significant personal issue over the short term that the board is satisfied is now passed. Could be anything. I won't speculate as to what that could be, but that's just one example. And yet the board values that person. So we wouldn't want to tie the board to, you know, you've got board member X misses 3 meetings for legitimate reasons, and the board is then obliged to remove them based on that. So we said we gave the board the ability to do so, but did not oblige them to do so. So they may remove. And also, we felt there was a check and balance required here so that if the board did remove a member for whatever reason, a board member, a PTI board member for any reason, the approval of the member is required. Now, in this case, the member is ICANN. So what you're going to have is the PTI board saying, look, Jonathan's missed 3 meetings. We want to remove him. ICANN, please approve this removal. And so there's a kind of check, and ICANN says, well, are you sure you want to do that? So that seems to us to be a reasonable check. Rather than the board simply just boots Jonathan out for missing 3 meetings, that they go to ICANN and there's a check in that. So that's what that's intended to. That's the purpose of that. Sharon, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. There was one other question in the draft bylaws, and that was how many meetings would a director have to have missed in order to be considered for removal? And we had just put in, and there's also a choice, so how many meetings in a 12-month period, and is it a certain number of meetings in a row, or is it just you've missed this number of meetings over the course of the year? And 3 is a number you often see, so if you've missed 3 consecutive board meetings or you've missed 3 meetings in a 12-month period. So that's one other question for you all to consider is what you want to, what that standard should be.
Well, I would suggest we put 3 in there, and I think it seems right that it should be 3 in a 12-month period, and especially given that we've softened it. And if others feel differently, I mean, 3 consecutive would be covered by 3 in a 12-month period, so it feels to me like 3 in a 12-month period would be adequate, and Paul Kane agrees with me in the chat. Let's go to Kavos.
The keywords, because anything might happen to anyone to be sick or to have some problems, obstacles, and so on and so forth. So we should talk about consecutive, a number 3 consecutive, and then we should talk about the period. Perhaps the 12 months that you mentioned may be a reasonable one, but the consecutive is very important to maintain. Thank you.
Thanks, Kavos. Except that logically, three in a 12-month period would cover, I think, unless I'm missing something, three in a 12-month would cover three consecutive. In any event, the board would then be empowered to potentially remove the director. And to Sam's question in the chat, is this only for regularly notings? I would think so. I think that's a good point, rather than short notice. I don't know. Maybe someone can help me to know what the notice period is. But and whether what the difference between regular and short notice in this context. Yeah, so Sharon confirms that the draft language proposed was regular meetings only, and that feels reasonable to me. No more than three regularly noticed meetings in a 12-month period. And Kavos, for your satisfaction, that would cover three consecutive in any event. I'm just putting this into the board code of conduct as opposed to baking it into the bylaws. I wasn't sure we had a board code of conduct necessarily. And second, Sam, the fact that it is may not feels that it's not necessarily a problem to have in the bylaws, but why don't you come in and give your thoughts?
Sure, thank you. I do agree that having the may in is helpful in this situation. I do worry about having a three meeting rule. I don't disagree with the three meeting concept, right? But I do have a worry that a three meeting rule, there are notice provisions required, but if we just look at how the ICANN board works, right, so there are meetings that are called that we know that are based around the ICANN meeting schedule that you always know when those are going to be, basically. But sometimes issues come up, and so it is indeed a regularly noticed meeting because the meeting, the directors will get the 48 hours of required notice that they need, but it might be set at a time that directors aren't available. And I think I don't want to bake into the bylaws a place that you could actually, if there was ill intent, and I'm not trying to give ill intent to anyone, but if there was ill intent, you could very easily structure meeting absences based on when you give notice to get someone off the board. So I don't want to really bake into the bylaws the ability to just have that hard and fast number. I would go against, in my view of corporate governance, I think it's good to have the expectation of attendance and everything and have guidelines of what people are expected to do, but have the further documentation to support it that can help build out some of those specifics about how the other members of the board should consider that. And as a follow-on on the board code of conduct, you all may have seen from the NTIA report that came out last week, there are a couple areas on their yellow action items from their evaluation against the COSO principles that suggested that certain governance practices that exist in ICANN should be ported over into PTI. And so one of the things that we're working on, I know that PTI conflicts of interest is on your agenda for this call later, but along with the PTI conflicts of interest policy within ICANN, the ICANN board conflicts of interest policy goes hand in hand with the board code of conduct. So one of the exercises that we're doing right now is we're actually going through the ICANN board code of conduct, which has been subject to public comment, developed with governance experts, et cetera. And we're trying to do an initial parse through it to make it applicable to PTI, and then that would be shared with the CWG and everything, and also subject to public comment before it went into effect. But there will be areas to help guide the board in these types of assessments. And so I think that that's another tool that will be available for the board and the community to look at as a place to specify some of the other governance expectations of the board that we could look at to see if things need to be in the bylaws or not. Again, with the with a permissive may as opposed to the requirement of a shall, we could live with it here. But I think that this is exactly the type of thing that a board code of conduct would actually be far more helpful in setting out the requirements for or setting out the expectations for as opposed to in the bylaws.
Coming off mute there. Okay. Let me defer to Lisa for a moment, and then come back with if necessary with any thoughts. I just noticed that Cheryl in the chat says that May is fine if it's in the bylaws encouraged to see the use of the development of a code of conduct and other similarly important documents such as a conflict of interest policy.
Can I go ahead, Jonathan?
Please.
Okay, thank you. I was actually going to echo some of what's been said in the chat, but usually when you have a board, you plan a year ahead for all the board meetings. So I must say I don't see the big problem in actually having this rule, and I think it's such a strong rule that gives an important signal to all the participants in the board that it should be both in the bylaws, and I think it's perfect to have in the code of conduct. So both places would be fine for me. And well, as also said in the chat, all the directors are planning these meetings. It's not only one or two who are doing this. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. I noticed there's support from you from Paul Kane and Matthew in the chat. And just to reiterate here, this empowers the board. It doesn't oblige the board. There can be further detail in the code of conduct. And moreover, it requires member approval. So there's a further check and balance in that ICANN's got to ratify this. The board can't simply say, right, you've missed three meetings, you're out. There's quite a few checks in here. The board is not obliged to do it. So I think the key new introduction here is this concept of a code of conduct. And I think so that's really a note, I guess, to Trang and others working on this. Not remembering accurately, but I don't recall us discussing this. And I understand Sam's point about this coming up through the NTIA documents and so on, but we do need, that's another document that we then need to start working on and developing if there's going to be a code of conduct in place as well.
Hey, Jonathan, this is Trent. Can I come in quickly on that?
Please do, yeah.
Yes, so as Sam mentioned, coming out of the NTIA report last week, we identified some additional documents that were recommended by NTIA to be put in place, and the PTI Board Code of Conduct being one of those documents. The other document that was referenced in the NTIA report is the expected standard of behavior document. So we are in the process of drafting both of those documents for PTI, which are going to be based on the ICANN documents. So the intent is to be able to hopefully either by tomorrow or early next week circulate to the CWG the package of the PTI conflict of interest policy, the PTI board code of conduct, as well as the expected standard of behavior as a package for the CWG to review.
Okay. That's helpful to know. Thanks, Trey. Good. All right. So the next is a similar one. The next 5.6.2 is similar in that this also creates the opportunity for removal for failure to meet any direct qualifications if the bylaws prescribe such qualifications. And again, our view was that this was reasonable, provided it is included in the qualifications, and that it is included as may remove, and the board is not obliged to do so, and approval of members required. So similar check and balances is put in place again. I'll just keep moving on unless you pull me back or want to discuss a particular point. On a quorum, we've got a two-director quorum, and the quorum must include at least one ICANN director and one NOMCOM appointed. And again, just note to the person taking notes, I think we need to move away from this NOMCOM appointed because it's NOMCOM nominated, I think, technically. And that's the case. And then there are certain thresholds where a simple majority, that is to say 3 of 5, might be a majority greater than a simple majority, 3 of 5 directors, that is to say 4 of 5 directors should be required for certain actions. And what we said was in those high threshold decisions, we felt okay that it should be 4 of the 5 directors, but we felt that that should include both of the NOMCOM directors. And that really provided a balance between the independent and the staff directors. So that was the motivation and intention for that. And that comes up both in terms of new committees and other matters where greater vote is required. Sharon, do come in and comment.
Thanks, Jonathan. So the proposal is 4 of the 5 directors and 2 of the directors must be the nominating committee nominated directors, if I understand that correctly. The one question I wanted to flag is, what if, because that requires both of the nominating committee seats be filled at all times in order to take any of these actions. What if there's a vacancy? How cumbersome is the process for nominating committee to nominate a new director? If it's a fairly streamlined process, then I'm not concerned about a vacancy because it will probably be filled quickly. But if it takes a while, you may want to consider that in the event of a vacancy, that there could be action with the one nominating committee nominated director present.
That's a good question, Sharon. There are others better qualified to me to talk about the NOMCOM processes, but I do take your point that we either need an alternative process or a mechanism to fill an interim vacancy if and when the NOMCOM is unable to you know, if they're on a director vacancy for whatever reason. Alan Greenberg, go ahead, Alan.
Thank you. I think in general, the NOMCOM may well be in the future trying to have people in its back pocket ready, but you're never in a position to guarantee that, especially at times of transition of NOMCOMs and things like that. But I'll question a more general issue. The wording says 4 of the 5 directors. Normally, votes that are require not just of percentage of the quorum, but of the directors, is of the sitting directors. And I worry that at any given time we may not have 5 directors. Conceivably, we could only have 3. And at that point, the corporation is paralyzed. So shouldn't we have these words slightly different than that?
I think that's a very good point, Alan. And there's noting that Sam's also made another good and related point here, that it's not necessarily a vacancy, but a conflict of interest may conceivably take out one of the NOMCOM appointed directors, so we need to accommodate for that. My sense is that we should let the lawyers create reasonable exceptions here and not try to second guess all of this. I mean, to my mind, the high level intent is here, but Sharon, you may want to come back on this, but to the extent that this intent can't be fulfilled and there are reasonable bases, we need to provide exceptions, such as those two cases that Sam pointed out. So I personally, I'd be comfortable with delegating that to the lawyers, but others may not. Cavus?
Alan, was, I think we should be quite careful whether we could face some difficulty if you talk about the sitting directors to make decisions. So that comes first on the quorum. To any decision, they need a quorum. If we settle the quorum, then the decision would go to the simple majority or to the 4/5 of the majority or any other criteria. But these are together. These are linked together. If you don't have any quorum, no decision is made whether you have sitting members or not sitting members. So have you connected these two together, or has the lawyer think of these two are interconnected? Thank you.
Thanks, Kavus. I'll leave the lawyers to think about that, but I would expect so.
Yeah, thank you. I'm happy to leave the wordsmithing to the lawyers, and if the intent is 80% as opposed to 4 out of the 5, then that's quite fine. With regard to conflicts, normally conflicted directors abstain, which is counted as a no. It sounds like, but what Sam is saying, we may, because of the very small number of directors and the threshold we're putting here, which is only one short of the whole board, that we may want to, they may need to treat abstentions or conflicts as, you know, not being part of the board for that decision or something like that. Again, I'm happy to leave it to the lawyers, but we don't want to get into catch-22 situations where we can't make decisions that are important. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan, and I know what you're referring to where these abstentions mean no, that's at the ICANN board. To my mind, or in my experience, that's an unusual situation. Normally an abstention is exactly that, an abstention. It's the ICANN board is the exception rather than the rule, but it's a fair point to make. And Sam points out in the chat that her concern is when a director is just simply precluded from participating by virtue of a conflict, that then creates a problem. But I suspect, and Cheryl points out that abstentions in her view should never mean no. Sharon, come in on the voice.
Yeah, so maybe just as a straw man on this, we could say that in the event that there's a vacancy or in the event that a director has a conflict and therefore will not be counted in the vote, then it's an action of a majority of the board with at least one nominating committee and one ICANN. That way you ensure that you've got representation from both of the constituencies, but you're not paralyzing the board.
Thanks, Sharon. And my sense is that you, and Cheryl, I noticed a check mark from Cheryl on that one, and Kavus as well. My sense is that you will be able to, the intent is expressed here. And our job is not to do your job or anyone else's. Our job is to give guidance on the intent. So personally, I feel happy that we're okay there. And in the interest of time, I think I might nudge us on then. and Alan points out that presuming one of the non-com seats is filled, well, I should hope so. But again, exceptions, part of good drafting is covering for exceptions as well as what is expected. And I hope that will be covered. So we then go on to the fees and compensation. And Lisa and I specifically elected in our initial draft not to opine on this for obvious reasons. We were naturally conflicted since we were likely to be the interim initial directors. But in the final event, after some discussion in the IOTF, it was decided that whilst we didn't rule out the long-term possibility of compensation for the directors, we did not want to put that in, and indeed our intention was in the short term that directors, non-com appointed or non-com nominated directors, will not be compensated for their work, and ICANN directors of course undertake this as part of their role within ICANN and therefore are not to be compensated. But reasonable expenses, including travel incurred solely in connection with work on the PTI board, should be reimbursed. So that's where we settled. I hope that's reasonable and acceptable to all, and I'm sure you'll let me know if that's not. And then we go on to some quorum rules, which indicate one ICANN director and one NOMCOM director. We felt that advisory committees were not appropriate or necessary in the case of PTI board. I think there has been one comment on the list from Christopher Wilkinson that this may be different in the event of a separation of PTI. One of the things we considered was that this is a new setup. This is a setup that the CWG has required will be reviewed in due course. I think we set the first review for 2 years after formation, but in any event, relatively shortly after formation, a review will take place. And I think our feeling was that key issues like compensation and advisory committees, to the extent that they are relevant, that should come out in a review. And in the first instance, we felt there is no need for advisory committees in a board of this size and nature in a subsidiary or affiliate company. Bearing in mind, of course, that there is the operating, in quotes, advisory committee in the form of the customer standing committee. So that exists in a general sense. Carlos.
Yes, Jonathan. I'm not quite sure why it is not necessary or required. What is the problem of having advisory committee? Does slow down the process? I think we should have a little bit more participation of the community or representative of the community or whatever say. Why it is not required is not necessary. I'm not convinced yet. Thank you.
That's a good point. Thanks for raising it. I think I'll try and make an attempt to answer that. First of all, at the ICANN level, and this is an ICANN subsidiary or technically known as an affiliate, at the ICANN level, there are advisory committees. So to that extent, the advisory committees exist already. Second, this is a very small board with a very looking at a very specific important function, and that function is advised or has significant input via the customer standing committee, and also we've provided for periodic reviews of that function where the broad community is involved. So it seems to me, anyway, I can't say that it seems to others, but it seems to me that there is plenty of scope for both advisory committees participating at the ICANN level and broader community input at relevant points in the cycle of PTI, so that seems to make sense. And Paul Kane points out something quite important as well, is that the PTI is a technical service provider, not an authority. The authority for policy arrests with the CCTLDs in the CC cases and in the ICANN policy making forum with the GTLDs. Kavus?
Yes, I put my my comment in the chat. Could you kindly look at that one? Perhaps. Thank you.
That. I'm just wondering if there's any, I mean, at the moment the wording is hard. It says advisory committees are not appropriate or necessary in the case of the PTI board. Is there any support for Kavus's point? Is anyone else coming forward and supporting this or, you know, having heard, I guess, my explanation? So are there any others in support of this? A couple of comments referring to the need to keep it lean and not duplicate existing position. I also see Sharon flags the proposal 112. Sharon, maybe you could remind us what that actually says, but and I see Lisa also agreeing there. So, Sharon, go ahead and then I'll...
Yeah, I just wanted to note the proposal speaks of having a board of directors and PTI having the minimum statutorily required responsibilities and powers, and then there's a reference to not replicating the accountability mechanisms at ICANN. So I think I was just pointing that there's language in the proposal to support the notion this is meant to be a lean governance structure.
I would make one other point and then I'll come back to you, Kavus, and that is that our job here is, we've got to be very careful here, our job is not to design anything more here. Our job is to ensure, as I said at the outset of this call, that staff implements faithfully according to our proposal. So being reminded of our proposal by Sharon is quite helpful in that context. Go ahead, Kavus.
Not closing the door totally.
Could you repeat that? Your first part of your comment was cut off.
Yes, the text that I suggested that this advisory committee is not normally required, but this means that in some exceptional cases, it may be a good idea to have this advisory committee. We do not totally rule out the actions that could be taken, but it would be very, very limited on exceptional cases by introducing the word or the term normally. Thank you.
I take the point, Kavus, but I'm not seeing any other support for this, so it's difficult for me to suggest that this goes in. I think there is going to be a further session where we bring this up in Helsinki, where we review where we are with all of this. So, but currently, I'm not seeing any other support for it. So, it's difficult for me to add that at this stage. So, in the interest of time, I'm going to keep us moving on. Oh, thank you, Kavus. I don't want to just not accept your input, but I appreciate that you're not being insistent either. When we come to 7.1, we've got the offices and whether to commit additional offices. And as I think Matthew pointed out, or someone pointed out, this, we've got offices, not officers, and. Our view is that the corporation will not need additional officers, and therefore the board does not need the capability to appoint additional officers. It's a small, lightweight outfit. Sharon, go ahead.
There was another question embedded in 7.1. It's related, is whether member approval will be required to appoint or remove officers, or whether that will just be for the PTI board to do.
Sharon, I'm sorry if we missed that. So the question there is whether the appointment or removal of officers will require member approval.
And Jonathan, let me just add to that, and I should clarify, the president does require the member to approve, so it's the other offices. And so you may feel that those are not so significant that you need the member weighing in and that the board would just be able to have the authority to do that for all officers other than the president.
I must say, I don't feel clearly or strongly on this one. And it's not quite clear to me who's going to be appointing these officers? Is it the board that appoints them in the first place?
Yes.
Treasurer and the secretary?
Yes.
Well, I think if the board approves them without member approval, then the board should be empowered to remove them. It seems logical. Anyone see that differently? Okay, so therefore the board, there's no need for additional officers. Thanks, Alan, for your tick mark. But the board has the discretion to appoint and remove the secretary and the treasury. Okay. Moving on, the president may delegate his or her responsibilities and powers subject to the control of the board. We thought that was reasonable, but the board may approve delegation of responsibilities, and that the member approval should be required for the prescription of additional powers by the board to the president. And that's just really a control, so that the president will have a preset, I expect, a prescribed set of powers, and to the extent that the board seeks to change those, it seems to make sense that there is an additional check and balance, which is the member approval. Is anyone worried about that? That means the board gives the president more powers. ICANN has to approve that. Seems reasonable to me. It doesn't seem to cause a particular problem. Okay. And then finally, strict plan, which is item 9.3, final part of the bylaws, is that the strategic plan is, we were asked if the strategic plan should follow the same review process. And essentially, our view was that a strategic plan is naturally sort of prepared in conjunction with a budget, and therefore needs to be prepared, and we would expect it to be subject to the same process as the budget. Matthew Shears makes a point in the chat that do we need a statement to ensure that those changes are consistent with the mission and bylaws? I think that's a fair point, Matthew, but maybe that's something we can just leave with the lawyers if they think that's something a necessary constraint to put on those. I would it feels logical and feels sensible, so I don't have an objection to it. In fact, I don't have any objection to it being added. It's like a sensible point. And then we've got finally Article 12, the amendments, which is the board approval of bylaw amendments. And now we've put the higher threshold in here again and ask for approval of bylaw amendments to require the higher threshold of 4 of the 5 directors, and 2 of the directors must be non-com appointed directors. And this would be subject to similar points made earlier when and if there were problems with either conflict or absence of directors. Sharon, your hand went up and then down again. Did you want to speak? Just put your hand up again if you do, and I'll bring you in. Go ahead, Sharon.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. I'm sorry, I'm going backwards, which is why I didn't want to interrupt the flow here. But I think this point you're raising is just the same point we talked about earlier on the more significant votes, and we can propose language, similar language for this issue. But if I can go back to budget, we still have an open point on that, which is the draft language of the bylaws said that PTI would, I think, propose a budget 270 days before the year begins, I believe is what it said. But remember, PTI needs to bring its budget to ICANN 9 months prior to the fiscal year. So we actually need to back up a little bit more. And the question for CWG is, how much time do you think the PTI board needs to consider the budget? So we've got 9 months that goes to ICANN. Do they need, you know, is it 10 months prior, 11 months prior that the PTI board is approving?
My suggestion on that would be that you know, ideally one does a budget a year ahead. And we could say, in order to accommodate that, you probably want to, if there's the 9 months, it's no less than 10 prior, so that we simply provide an extra month, that the PTI board approves the budget no less than 10 months prior, and that just creates an extra month in there. That would be what I would think. And Sharon, that seems okay to you. I know Chuck isn't on the call unusually. Chuck, you are there. I don't know how that sounds to you.
I am here, Jonathan, and I'm actually just getting into Adobe now. So, first of all, let me remind everybody that Xavier was very much involved in this process accommodating the CWG recommendation. So I'm not sure if another month is needed the way it's designed. The 9 months. Now, keeping in mind that it's not just going to the, I don't think it's just going to the ICANN board at that 270-day mark, but there would be a process for the community to provide feedback. So by the time we get to the posting of the draft ICANN budget, there's already been feedback that's been submitted and accommodated from the community, so that the draft ICANN budget would have a fairly well-vetted inclusion of the PTI budget. So, and I don't know, since I just got into Adobe, I don't know whether Xavier is on or not, but I suggest that we check with Xavier and the ICANN staff on that to make sure. But I think the process would work, whether an extra month is needed or not, before that 9 month window. They could probably tell us, but I think that's a prudent way to do it. Is just let's check with them.
Thanks, Chuck. Let's do that then. And Grace is already noting that's a check we need to make, whether that's a necessary additional change. Alan Greenberg, go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, checking with Xavier will probably be helpful. I have a recollection of a discussion months ago in some meeting, and I can't remember if it was one of these or something else, where we decided that the 9 months had been a little bit overreaching, because the ICANN budget itself is published about 4 months before it takes effect. So it's not clear we need 5 months in advance of that to feed it into the ICANN budget. And I thought we came up with a way to meet the requirements, but finesse it into something that's more practical, so we're not predicting a budget a full year out from when it starts. But I can't remember how we did that, and hopefully Xavier may recall something. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. And I note Akram's comment in the chat that the PTI budget should be approved by the PTI board right before the ICANN board approves the ICANN budget, which is at the end of the process, not at the beginning. Chuck, go ahead if that's a new hand.
Sure. And Alan's right that we did talk about that 9 month issue. And I think what we concluded was that what's coming out at the beginning of that 9 month period is not the final budget, but it's one for comment and discussion. And if ICANN, in their involvement, and it needs to have another month, that's fine. They can have that. But I think the 9 months is still a good mark, because there's a possibility of multiple comment periods on that part within the IANA part of the process of reviewing the budget. And if more than one comment period is needed or feedback from the community, there needs to be time for that. If it's not needed, I don't think there's anything lost. but it's better to have a little bit too much cushion than not enough so that it does not delay the posting of the ICANN budget, which if we go by the recent years, it's been beginning of March. So I don't think the 9 months is excessive to allow for plenty of comment period, especially in cases where there has to be another iteration of comments from the community for the PTI budget. I hope that made sense.
Okay. So do we have enough information with which to work? I've lost this slightly. I just need to I'm just not 100% sure that Sharon will have from the information we've provided enough to work with. Go ahead, Sharon.
Yeah, we're just trying to deal with a purely mechanical issue of making the PTI bylaws sync up with the ICANN bylaws. So we can't have both bylaws say that the deadline is 9 months prior because we need some amount of time. The deadline is 9 months prior, PTI has to deliver to ICANN. And then there's got to be some amount of time before the 9 months when the board of PTI is approving it. It can be a week if the board can gather quickly, but we can't literally have the same deadline. It just won't work mechanically.
Thanks. It feels like that my thought is that can be accommodated by working. I mean, as you say, it's more of a mechanical issue than a substance point, and just making sure that the two work together. Chuck?
So, thanks. I'm a little bit confused on what Sharon's saying because, and maybe I don't understand the ICANN side of it, but having worked through this with Xavier, where ICANN and its budget process really needs the PTI board approved budget is before they start post their draft budget for public comment, and that's not 9 months in advance. That's like I said, around the 1st of March. So I'm probably missing something here, Sharon, but now the fact that at 9 months prior, if the ICANN bylaw says there needs to be something submitted, I would think that that ICANN would receive the same budget the community would for PTI at that nine-month window, but that wouldn't be the one approved by the PTI board. The approval of the PTI board would be after public comment of the PTI budget and so forth, but it does need to be before that March deadline for posting of the ICANN budget. So I'm probably missing something, and please point that out to me.
Yeah, what would be helpful to us if someone could just do a quick sample timeline of what you think the sequence is of when the PTI approves it, when it's going to ICANN, when it's going to public comment, because we just want to make sure it's all syncing up together. And it may be that it does, but I don't have a good picture of the sequence of events leading up to the final budget.
I suggest we get Trang, who's posted something in the chat anyway, to provide you with that, Sharon. And if a concern remains, then we deal with it. Chuck asked in the chat that Trang and Xavier did that. So I think we should do that, and if a concern remains on after that, then we deal with it. Okay, I'm just mindful of where we are in the call. I think we have time to get through the remainder of the agenda, but I feel like we've that's the point, just to make sure these are coherent and work together properly. I'm going to nudge us then through the next points in this agenda. We put up as a second bullet point the ICANN PTI contract, which is really just we're not going to go into that in any detail at this point. And perhaps I should just ask Trang to remind us where we are in the process of dealing with the ICANN PTI contract. Just so you're clear on that, Sharon, could you just come in and remind everyone where we are with the development of that work? And so it's clear.
Yes, Jonathan, this is Trang. So where we are is that per the work plan, we would have the draft naming functions agreement ready to be circulated to the IOTF and CWG for review this Friday. So that's what's indicated in the work plan. And we are internally working on reviewing a draft of that and tightening it up before we share it.
Thanks, Trang. And I'll remind the group that one of the issues that will be subject then for discussion is whether or not there is more than the contract is all encompassing, or whether or not there are multiple agreements, and that's subject to some further discussion as we see the substance of those. Then separately, there was some work done to deal with Annex C of the proposal. And Sharon, I'm not sure if I prepared you for this, but if you do feel sufficiently prepared to just give a quick summary of the work that was done there so that the group is clear on that, it really just needs probably a very brief input as to what work was done there. If you feel able to do so, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. So based on some comments from Paul Kane and others, we've created this template that reflects portions of the CWG proposal that were in Annex C to the proposal, Section 7 and 8. And we've provided a draft of a provision and also noted whether it would go in the bylaws or in the contract or both. And it just documents certain recognition of certain respect for policies and procedures that exist at the registries, and the recognition that, for example, CCTLD registries will not require a contract, and things of that nature. And the preference was, in certain cases, to reflect it in both the bylaws and the contract, because there was a feeling that the bylaws, from a worldwide standpoint, had a feeling of a stronger, more enforceable set of documents, and that there would be greater comfort in seeing it in the bylaws. We also propose it being in the contract because we think it's important to document through that structure as well. So I think at this point, those who've been interested in Annex C, I think, have signed off on this table that we prepared, and I think it's been circulated, and I don't think there's anything more, Jonathan, to cover on that.
Certainly did that more efficiently than I could have done, so thanks, Sharon. Yeah, I agree with you. If people have questions or issues, refer to the documents and or come back to us, but I think that work does seem to have been rounded off. Now, on the IANA IPR issue, it's at a slightly delicate point in the sense that it was our understanding, that is the CWG legal client committee or those of us that are working with the other communities on this, that there was going to be a mutual referral to the separate legal teams, and there was some discussion of whether that was in sequence or in series. In the end, it happened in sort of parallel, and we haven't really had an opportunity to go back and talk properly. There's been various emails passed between us. We haven't had the opportunity, and we're just in the process of scheduling a meeting. So I think it's probably premature to say anything about that. It's really about any appropriate safeguards, and together the three communities came up with a set of principles for the handling of the IANA IPR within the IETF Trust. We got the legal input, and we simply haven't yet discussed that legal input amongst ourselves and understood what the implications of that are, what concerns and issues that throws up. So I think there's not a whole lot more to be said about that for the moment. And if your question, Kavos, is how urgent is the IPR issue, I think it's felt to be reasonably urgent. There was some talk of the fact whether or not this could be resolved post-transition or not, and I think there's some quite strong feelings that it must be resolved ahead of or at the time of the transition. So there's reasonable urgency, like there are with many of these points, but we're working on it. On the PTI conflict of interest policy, that's still to come as part of the delivery of a series of documents that Trang referred to a moment ago, although it's expected that that will be very closely related to the existing board of directors conflict of interest policy. So that's where we are with that. And I think, Trang, I'll then hand over to you on implementation. If there's anything else you want to cover that hasn't been satisfactorily covered right up until this point in the call. So let me give the group a rest from my voice and hand over to Trang for input and discussion.
Thank you, Jonathan. Okay, so let's wait for the slides to load here. All right, thank you very much, Brenda. If we could go to the next slide, please. All right, so to give everyone a quick update on where we are with implementation planning activities as it relates to the parallel testing efforts, I believe we're day 71, 72, something like that, into the 90-day parallel testing period, and everything continues to progress well. So if no issues, we are anticipating that parallel testing will conclude on actually July 5th. And then with regards to the root zone maintainer agreement, we are very, very close to finalizing that agreement. I think we're just down to a couple of items that we need to, work out some of the more final details with VeriSign. So we're very close on that, on finalizing that agreement. And then real quickly on where we are with the NAMES SLEs, as you know, we have been collecting data since March. And we have also, what we've been working on is aggregating the data that we've collected. So by now we have a little bit over 3 months of data, and we're aggregating the data and taking a look at them and are working on proposing some performance targets or SLAs based on that data to then present back to the SLE design team. Per the agreement with the design team in Marrakesh, we would provide that information in the early to mid July timeframe. So we're still on target to do that. The team has also been working on a dashboard to report all of these SLAs as required in the SLE proposal, and we've got a version of that done and are going through testing and fine-tuning some of the charts and things like that. But we expect that there would not be any issues with having the dashboard done in time for the transition. Next slide, please. With regards to PTI, obviously we have various streams of work going on with PTI. We have the PTI formation documents, which are the bylaws, the articles of incorporations, and some of the other documents that will be circulating hopefully tomorrow for the CWG to review. So that's one track of work. And then the second track of work that we have for PTI is all of the various contracts and subcontracting agreements. So that is also on track per the work plan to be delivered this week. And then the third track of work that we have for PTI, which is more of an internal track of work, is all of the work related to operationalizing PTI. And, so all of these things that we're working on in terms of the bylaws and the incorporation of PTI, all of that is just to make sure that there exists a legal entity, but for it to be fully functional on October 1st, there's a lot of internal work that needs to be done. So we have a separate track of work along that. All of the discussions around the PTI staffing topic is actually going to feed into the development of the intercompany services agreement, which I know is one of the topics that is still currently open in terms of whether or not that remains a separate agreement or if it gets combined with the naming functions contract in some way. So that's sort of the three stream of work that are going on and how they interrelate to each other. Next slide, please. With regards to the IANA IPR, as Jonathan mentioned, there is still a lot of work to be done by the operational communities to define sort of the framework, and we're still waiting for those requirements from the community. Separately, you know, ICANN is starting to look at the valuation of the IANA trademark, so we've just started to do some initial thinking around that. So that's why it's reflected as 5% there. On the RZERC, as you know, we have published the RZERC charter for public comment. So it's currently in the public comment period. It's a 30-day period. We anticipate that we would be able to finalize that charter by the end of July, and then would initiate the process to form the RZERC at the beginning of August. And that the RZERC would then be formed by sort of mid-August, the mid-August timeframe. The process for the formation of the RZERC is a bit simpler than the process to form the CSC, in that there isn't necessarily an open call for expression of interest. It's essentially are the various organizations that are going to be part of the RZERC appointing the either the chairs or one of their delegates to serve on the RZERC. So it's a simpler process, and we think that that could be accomplished in a shorter time frame. With regards to the CSC, we have initiated the process and have requested that the appointing organizations, which are the ICANN SOs and ACs, as well as the RYSG, to initiate their own internal processes to appoint members and liaisons to the CSC. We have provided a deadline of July 22nd for the appointments to be communicated to ICANN, and then the next step would be that ICANN would forward those appointments to the CCNSO and GNSO, and so that they could make a final determination on the composition of the CSC. We expect that all of that work would be completed by mid-August. With regards to the escalation processes, we've received the clarification that we needed in order to update the process documentation. So based on the clarification received, we have actually started to update those process documentations and are almost done with that. Next slide, please. With regards to the ICANN bylaws, you can see there that that work has been completed as the ICANN board adopted the bylaws on May 27th. The ICANN's articles of incorporations are currently out for public comment. It's a 40-day public comment period, and I believe it closes in early July. So that's where that is at. With regards to the IRP enhancements, there is a CWG working group that has been formed to define the procedures for the IRP process. So that work is ongoing, and we are monitoring and following the progress of that working team's work. With regards to the reconsideration request enhancement, around that is essentially to update our process documentation, which we see no issues with being able to complete by mid-August. And then the empowered community enhancements are essentially looking at what mechanisms and things will need to be put in place in order to support the empowered community. So by that, you know, we mean secretariat support, looking at the process to see if the empowered community would require a web page to post their materials. Would they need, you know, a dedicated email address or an Adobe Connect room, you know, those types of things, things that would need to be in place to support their processes. And we don't anticipate any issues with being able to put those in place by the mid-August timeframe. With regards to the financial planning process, what that refers to is the ICANN caretaker budget and the PTI caretaker budget, as well as the ICANN and PTI financial planning process that we've been discussing here. And as you know, the caretaker budget framework are completed, is defined in the bylaws, in the ICANN bylaws. And with regards to the financial planning processes, we have presented a process to the DTO. And there's one area of that plan that we presented to the DTO that still requires to be fleshed out a little bit, and that is the engagement portion prior to the PTI board approving the PTI budget. But we don't anticipate that that would be that would take too much time to get fleshed out, and that that this project would be able to be completed by mid-August. So I will stop there and see if there are any questions or comments. So, Jonathan, since there are doesn't seem to be any comments or questions, I'll turn it back to you.
Yes, thank you, Trang. So that's good to see and to hear. I think under those circumstances, we can move then straight on to the work of the client committee. And essentially, because we focus so strongly on the sort of legally related issues up front, there's not a whole lot to say except for the one has been a question raised. You'll remember back in the ICANN meeting in Marrakesh, staff presented a proposal for the staffing of PTI that involved the secondment of current IANA stroke ICANN employees to the PTI, and this caused some reaction of surprise, which was then followed up by a request for a more comprehensive rationale of that. That rationale has taken some time to be forthcoming, but has now been forthcoming, and the area is the subject of an ongoing discussion within the IOTF. And I think in the most recent IOTF meeting, that is to say yesterday, staff committed to go away and sort of rethink this a little about what kind of parameters might exist on this. For example, one of the key issues might be when and if new staff are hired in to perform IANA-related functions as their primary role, are they hired by ICANN and seconded to PTI, or are they actually hired by PTI? So there's a number of open items with respect to that. But there was one particular question that was raised with Sidley via the client committee, and Sharon, I fully acknowledge that you may not have had time to consider this. So I just flag with the group that we have raised this question. This was a question that Chuck posed to the group that has come up in discussion of the same topic in the registry stakeholder group. Now, Sharon, I'm not sure if you have had a chance to think about this or have a preliminary response, or if you'd like more time to do so.
Jonathan, can you just state the question? I did see some emails about the topic, but what's the particular question?
Let me get it exactly, Sharon, so that I make sure I'm happy to be helped on this as well. But essentially, the point is that ICANN is proposing to the proposal says that the IANA naming functions is both functionally and legally ring-fenced. Well, that was the concept from the ICANN entity. And the question that was raised is the secondment of virtually all or all PTI personnel from ICANN, does that create a risk that, I guess, either that this is not consistent with the proposal or that PTI is in effect not a separate corporation under California law if there are no staff employed within PTI? And that's notwithstanding views that others might have, like James Gannon, who says he has concerns over this common issue. James, repeat what I said earlier, that it's a subject of an ongoing discussion in the IOTF and in fact, some postings on the CWG list. So it's a live topic, but that was the sort of legal question, if you like, Sharon.
Yeah, so to answer the particular question of if we don't transfer any staff, legally transfer them to PTI, does that risk that it's somehow not viewed as a standalone, separate corporation. I don't have concerns there. It will still be a legal entity, and it will have activity going on through these basically a services arrangement with ICANN. So I'm not worried about that. I think there are probably other issues that are raised, but I don't have a concern about the corporation status.
Okay. That's fine. And I think really then from the point of view of the group, the question will be, is this consistent with the letter and spirit of the proposal? And I see already others are posting their views, like Avery and James. And how do we want to resolve this? And I just remind you that the staff did commit to go away and rethink this after the IOTF meeting yesterday. Chuck, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan, and thanks, Sharon. I just want to make sure that what I just heard from Sharon answers David's question. I think it might, but let me, David Maher is the one in the registries that raised the issue, so let me read it verbatim so that Sharon can confirm or not that her answer answered this question. He said that the proposed secondment of virtually all PTI personnel from ICANN appears to me to pose a legal risk that PTI would not be considered a separate corporation under California law. I suggest that Sidley be asked to look into this. Now, I think Sharon just answered this, that it doesn't, but I just want to confirm that.
Yes, Chuck, my intention was to respond to that. Yeah, I don't have concerns about the legal status of the corporation. As I said, there are other issues, which it sounds like you all are discussing, but I don't have an issue on that score.
So let me suggest this. There is certainly the feel free to, as I'm sure you will, to make points known on via the CWG or the IOTF, in fact. But the kind of live questions, just to give sense of where the live questions are, is should we offer the opportunity to current IANA staff to transfer to PTI? Should that, under the same conditions as they currently enjoy, should that be mandatory? Should they be given the opportunity to stay within their existing ICANN employment and be seconded to PTI? Is there an exception with respect to the PTI manager? Is that different with staff that come along and be appointed in future rather than those that are currently employed? And Greg, I note you point out in the chat that you don't think these are legal issues. And indeed, just to be crystal clear, I'm not suggesting we ask these questions of Sharon. These are questions for the group. They are legal questions to the extent that if there was an opinion of the lawyers that these contradict the proposal in some way or pose other legal risks or issues, that's a point. But for the most part, these are about respecting the current employees, but also sticking to the consistency with our proposal. Alan Greenberg, go ahead, Alan.
Thank you. I unfortunately had to miss the IOTF meeting yesterday, but I will be providing something in writing to give my opinions. But in short, I think as we look at all of these issues, we really need to remember that, you know, to quote an old commercial, job one is making sure that IANA performs the job well and we can retain and attract the best possible people to do that job. Otherwise, all of the rest of this doesn't matter. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Good points. And Avery notes in the chat that her concern is about a potential conflict of interest with the PTI manager being both an employee of ICANN and reporting to or being responsible to the PTI board. Olivier, go ahead.
Thanks very much, Jonathan. Olivier Capanabal speaking. And coming from an industry where there's a lot of contracting going on, would there be opposition to these employees remaining employees of ICANN, but actually being contracted by PTI to work solely on PTI matters. As in, they would then take up, I think that there are ways to get them to effectively act as PTI employees, but being contracted from ICANN. Is this
in my layman's understanding, that is in effect what is a form of what the secondment is. It's effectively a sort of perhaps a reverse secondment, but nevertheless, it's in essence the secondment is a form of contractual transfer while they remain employees of ICANN. Greg, go ahead.
Thanks. First, in response to Olivier, I think you're correct, but secondment actually goes further than subcontracting, in the sense that secondment is meant in many ways to mimic being employed by the company to which you are seconded, but your ultimate employment relationship is with your original employer. Law firms occasionally second folks that we over to clients. We're always, in a sense, working as contractors. But when you're seconded, you go sit in the office there every day, and you go to their lunchroom and go to their parties, and they're supervised by their personnel rather than law firm personnel, et cetera. So it's almost a kind of being an expat in a way. So I don't think contracting or subcontracting, it puts us in the right direction. Reason I raised my hand, though, was that I think the question we need to deal with is whether secondment meets the requirements of our proposal and ultimately the ICG proposal into which our proposal was poured. I know that the memo that ICANN submit on this said that their analysis was that it does. My view is that it doesn't meet what is set forth in our proposal. And if that's the case, then the question is we don't need to be slavishly following our proposal, but if we are going to vary from it, I think that's a decision that needs to be made, and we need to decide not only that on a practical basis we can live with some or all of the secondment, but we also need to decide either A, who's right between me and ICANN, if you will. Don't mean to elevate myself as an arbiter of that, but between the two possibilities that it does or it doesn't. And do we change our proposal? How do we kind of live with something that is being proposed that is at variance? And then we need to deal with the practicalities of how we do it. And I kind of sit where Avery does in a way too, which is that secondment of current employees, for morale reasons or whatever they may be, is marginally acceptable. New employees, I don't find that acceptable, and the PTI manager, that raises yet another question, kind of dual loyalty. Either way, though, I think there are solutions to these problems. Ultimately, we can get through this, but I think as a gating factor, we need to determine whether what's being proposed as an implementation is or is not consistent with our recommendations. Thanks.
Okay, well, exactly. And hopefully, I know that that ICANN is clearly on the call. Trang, Akram, Sam, and others are listening carefully to this. They've heard similar input by the IOTF and are reconsidering the way in which this is structured. So it may be that there is an alternative, and it's not that. I mean, certainly it doesn't seem that we can modify our proposal at this stage. It's really a matter of both of fitting with the proposal in a way that the community is reasonably satisfied. in if you'd like to make another point. Olivier, I do not hear you at this stage.
Oh, thanks very much, Jonathan. It's Olivier speaking, and sorry, I hadn't heard you, that you had passed the floor to me. I have a question for Greg. He mentioned what was not acceptable in his view, and the question is, what would be acceptable? Would the hiring of full-time employees by PTI who have been therefore laid off from ICANN and therefore become full-time employees, would that be acceptable, or is there a halfway mark that would make the separation acceptable enough? Because I have trouble understanding that. Thank you.
First, I wouldn't use the term laid off because that's rather pejorative or at least sad. But in terms of transferring the employees to PTI from which they would be employed, that is still what I believe from the point of view of satisfying our requirements and making PTI as self-sufficient and easy to separate or as separable as possible, that's the gold standard. I understand that there are a variety of issues that have been well raised by ICANN with regard to that problem. I'd like to see if we can solve those problems. As to whether it's a halfway point, I mean, I think you're either an employee or you're not. Secondment, in a sense, is a halfway point. Whether there's a point, halfway point between secondment or not, you know, really goes at best to kind of trying to solve problems at the time of separation, as well as, you know, trying to solve, you know, all the other problems that come up that are distinguish someone who has a single employer from someone who has both an employer and a place to which they are seconded.
So we're at the time limit, more or less, for the call now. And so I just need to, well, I think there's been a number of points raised about the possibility of secondment of existing employees, potential time limits to that secondment, questions over whether that applies to the PTI manager or not, about whether new hires are covered by this secondment approach, and so on. My understanding is that ICANN staff, who are, after all, are running this implementation, will take this on board and rethink the proposal for a uniform standard secondment, which was what was originally proposed. They've heard the feedback, and we now await some sort of revised position based on this feedback. And I suggest we give them the opportunity to do that. Trang, is that consistent with your understanding? I don't want to put you on the spot here, but is that what you're expecting to happen, just to confirm my understanding of it?
Thank you, Jonathan. This is Trang. Yes, I think that's consistent in terms of the next steps. We'll take the feedback and the input provided via the CWG mail list as well as on the IOTF call yesterday, as well as the feedback provided on today's call. I think what we recognize is that there is a lot of support for the approach that we have proposed, but we do recognize that there are some concerns that have been raised by the community. So what we will do is take all of those feedback and go back and think on it a bit more and then come back to the group.
Thanks, Trang. I think that I just would like to reflect accurately. I think there are quite a few concerns being raised. It's not universal, but there are quite a number, and therefore that does need to take an account of. But that's good to hear. All right. There's a couple of other wrap-up items that I'd like to cover. I see people, we're losing people now. So just to wrap up, there's some ongoing discussion about project costing, and this is a bigger picture, and it actually pertains less to the work of this group but more to probably the work of the workstream two in the CWG accountability as to how effective budgeting and cost control is managed within these type of groups. So that work is going on. I don't think I have anything I'd like to raise under AOB. If anyone else would like to raise something, please do. Grace, go ahead. You are, in fact, I did have a couple, and I see on my notes I did. I'm just a little tired at the end of the day. Go ahead, and I'm sure you'll cover for me on these ones, Grace.
I can let you go ahead, Jonathan. I was just going to mention the couple of points that you had in your notes. Mainly that there would be a meeting in Helsinki on implementation. Maybe just important to alert the group about that.
Correct, and I think we should, thanks Grace, and I think we should make sure we post that clearly to the list. There is a plan to have an updated meeting on where we've got to with the implementation. I'm not sure we've talked about the detailed structure of that meeting, although I have a pretty clear view in my own mind of what that will be, but I'm expecting there'll be an update on the implementation from staff, and that it will be attended by the co-chairs and likely members of the IOTF as well, who will be on hand to have a discussion with the broader community about the implementation and any questions or issues that are arising. So it's really an update and Q&A session on the implementation along the lines that we've been talking about here, so we make sure we bring everyone along with us and our work. Good. I do not believe, other than that, we have a future meeting ahead of Helsinki. We will need to think about what is necessary for future meetings and how intense those are as we ramp up the final stages of the implementation. Much as many of us might have had enough of this work, we do need to see it through to its final conclusion, and so there will probably be a requirement over the forthcoming months to meet reasonably regularly, and I guess we should just put you on notice of that. Okay, it's been a long day for me, and I suspect for many of you, or at least a busy start to the day in some parts of the world. So let's call it a day there, stop the recording, and thank you all for your attendance and participation.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.